Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here today with a special breaking news report and interview with UN Watch Executive Director Hillel Neuer. His organization has been covering the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also called UNRWA, and things have come to a head. Over the weekend, beginning January 26, 2024, for your reference, 9 countries paused its funding for UNRWA after reports came out showing 12 of its employees actually participated in the October 7th attacks, where Hamas violently raped and heinously murdered 1,200 Israelis in their homes and at a music festival on sovereign Israeli land, as well as bringing hundreds of individuals into Gaza as hostages, and then opened its gates so that local non-affiliated Gazans could enter into Israel and loot homes, take appliances, clothes, and food from Israeli refrigerators. I always report that because it is underreported that in addition to thousands of Hamas fighters entering Israel, so too did Gazan looters come to spoil and take items from individuals. After Israeli authorities reported that 12 UN workers actually participated in the attack and then celebrated it with others, UNRWA actually terminated their contracts. UN Watch released a groundbreaking report detailing how, despite UNRWA insists it has zero tolerance for hatred and anti-Semitism, UNRWA staff in a 3,000-member Telegram group cheered and celebrated Hamas's October 7th massacre while simultaneously asking where their salaries would be paid. UNRWA staff in the group shared photos and video footage of the October 7th events and prayed for the terrorists' success and for Israel's destruction. The biggest donors to this organization, including the United States, Germany, the United Kingdom, Australia, Italy, Canada, Finland, and the Netherlands, withdrew its support, at least putting their financial support on pause. After these first 8 withdrew funding, Japan announced Sunday that it, quote, decided to suspend additional funding to UNRWA for the time being, end quote. France, which makes a 10th country, has not pledged to suspend funding, but has actually planned not to make a new payment moving into the first half of 2024. The countries that I have listed are all on UNRWA's list of top donors from 2022. The United States of America gave UNRWA $344 million U.S. dollars in 2022 and was the largest single donor to UNRWA in that year. In 2022, the organization received more than 1.17 billion US dollars from various nations and organizations around the world. Most are Western countries. Out of 22 Arab nations in the world, the ones that pledged money to UNRWA in 2022 include Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait, which made it onto the top list of donors in 2022, plus Oman, Kuwait, Malaysia, Indonesia, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Kazakhstan, which pledged $10,000 in 2022, and Pakistan, which pledged $8,756, the lowest out of the Arab nations on the list. With those Western countries dropping out, that is a big deal and a huge loss for UNRWA. Since 2015, UN Watch has been exposing Facebook groups, some 150 of them, in which UNRWA staff members get onto the social media platform and write anti-Semitic items and call for incitement and jihadi terrorism. It is widely known and reported that UNRWA textbooks teach young kids to hate Jews and that Jews and Israelis are the enemy who should be destroyed. That is what is expressed in textbooks that teachers use to teach Palestinian children. I have seen and investigated photographic evidence and passages of this. It is real, despite it sounds like it could not be. I have seen and investigated photographic evidence and passages of these textbooks. It is real, despite it sounds like it could not be. Saturday night, I spoke with a colleague and source of mine named Hillel Neuer. He is the executive director of UN Watch, which is a watchdog organization that works to expose corruption in the United Nations and, as they say in their mission statement, monitor the performance of the United Nations by the yardstick of its own charter. Neuer is a lawyer and top expert on human rights and has been particularly invested in exposing inefficiencies and outright anti-Semitism within UNRWA. He is a leading global expert in this field. To make it as simple as I can, critics of UNRWA are frustrated that after so many generations, there are still Palestinian refugees and that people can actually get grandfathered in, so to speak, by granting refugee status to the children and great-grandchildren of the original Palestinian refugees who became refugees during the 1948 War of Independence. There are actually two UN agencies for refugees. One is for the world, and the other is specifically for Palestinians. While the United Nations Refugee Agency, or the UNHRC, works to get people out of refugee status and offer them a better life, UNRWA has outright failed at that mission because it is not their mission. UNRWA actually has their own definition of refugee, special for Palestinians. For Palestinians, that status is given over at birth, even if the person was born and raised in the same place their entire life and was never displaced. Now, that's for a specific group of Palestinians. Not every Palestinian is considered a refugee, but there are refugee camps in which Palestinians are considered refugees, and every one of their descendants is born into refugee status as well. For Palestinians, that status is given over at birth, even if the person was born and raised in the same place their entire life and was never displaced. That's because, in essence, the idea that UNRWA lives with and works with and breathes with is that Palestinians were displaced in 1948 and are actively working on returning the Palestinians that are in the West Bank and Gaza to places that they may have once lived, believed that they lived, or places throughout modern-day sovereign Israel that they would like or want to go live in. UNRWA was founded in 1949, and the point was to help Arab refugees. That year, as Israel was just born with international support, legislation from the United Nations, and a load of funding from the Jewish community around the world funneled into the Jewish National Fund, also known as the JNF, to buy land, officially buy land, buy fields, buy trees, and plant trees into the land so that the Jews would have a homeland. There were 700,000 Arabs, and I say Arabs because in that year, there was no such thing as Palestinian. It was Jews and Arabs living in British-controlled Palestine. Palestine is a name that was given over by Western forces. It was not a Jewish name. It was not an Arab name. It was a Western name that was given and assigned. It was not chosen by Arabs or Jews. Arabs were Arabs, and Jews were Jews living in British Mandate Palestine at the time. 700,000 Arabs at this time were displaced. Some lost their homes or livelihoods or both when the state of Israel was officiated and the lines to create borders for the country were drawn up, and there were a lot of deaths as well. About 150,000 Arabs were given Israeli citizenship and welcomed to live under Israeli sovereignty. Many Arabs at the time rejected the premise of a Jewish state and chose not to become Israeli. About 150,000 said yes and were in the territory that became Israel, and they accepted Israeli citizenship at that time. Those 150,000 turned into today's 2 million Arab Israelis, which live and work and have the same rights as any Jewish Israeli in the state of Israel. Many today are proud Israelis and serve in the armed forces or are volunteering for the war effort in some capacity right now. countries that signed off on the drawn up borders for Israel in that time include Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. This happened after Israel won its War of Independence, which Israel fought against Lebanon and Syria in the north, Iraq and Transjordan, which was renamed Jordan during the war, and Egypt, as well as contingents from Sudan and Arabs at the time that were in the region and were volunteering either from the area or from other Arab countries that came to rush the Israeli borders. After all of this, UNRWA took those 700,000 displaced Arabs and called them and their descendants refugees. Today, the United Nations estimates that there are more than 5.9 million Palestinians with refugee status who live off of what was supposed to be temporary humanitarian support. I would like to repeat that. 700,000 displaced Arabs are today more than 5.9 million Palestinians with refugee status. We went from 700,000 refugees in 1949 to 5.9 million that are considered Palestinian refugees who live off of humanitarian support that was supposed to be temporary back then, but has turned into a system of welfare until today. They live in tight quarters in refugee camps and are kept in this system while teaching youth that they must fight and kill Jews in order to return to where they lived before 1948. Instead of making the number of refugees smaller, UNRWA has spent 74 years turning the initial refugee population into a demographic 8 times its original size. UNRWA has not resettled one refugee. But again, that is not their purpose. They do not claim to resettle as the UNHRC claims to resettle. They just claim to help. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is now urging the donor countries to reconsider and says that Palestinians in desperate need should not face penalties due to the alleged actions of few. Despite 9 employees were dismissed in October after the attack, and apparently the UN warned UNRWA to remain neutral and warned its staff to remain neutral, Israel has vowed to exclude UNRWA from any role in taking care of Gaza and Gazan Palestinians after the conflict. So Israel is already not trying to work with UNRWA or have UNRWA take over when this war ends. UNRWA released a statement on their site when the first grouping of countries pulled out their funds. Here's the first couple of paragraphs. I will read these first 2 paragraphs from their published statement out to you. It is shocking to see a suspension of funds to the agency in reaction to allegations against a small group of staff, especially given the immediate action that UNRWA took by terminating their contracts and asking for a transparent, independent investigation. The United Nations Office of Internal Oversight Services, OIOS, the highest investigative authority in the UN system, has already been seized of this very serious matter. UNRWA is the primary humanitarian agency in Gaza, with over 2 million people depending on it for their sheer survival. Many are hungry as the clock is ticking towards a looming famine. The agency runs shelters for over 1 million people and provides food and primary health care even at the height of the hostilities. End quote. I want to give a few quick facts about UNRWA. UNRWA operates schools, clinics, infrastructure projects, aid programs in refugee camps that now look like densely populated neighborhoods throughout Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. So UNRWA operates in all of those locations. It has 13,000 employees just in Gaza alone. Most of them are Palestinians that come from the area that have been given jobs through UNRWA. Now, as we speak, you and I, here on the Israel Daily News podcast, Neuer is on his way to the United States to address Congress during a hearing about UNRWA, which was scheduled before this major news, by the way. After he addresses Congress, he will be interviewed on CNN, The New York Times, and other major news outlets. But know this, the Israel Daily News podcast was first. We took this interview on Saturday night, right after the news came out about the withdrawals of these countries. Let's now hear what Neuer has to say about this very serious issue. Hello, welcome to the Israel Daily News podcast. Thank you for joining us in this sort of breaking news scenario.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
UNRWA is a controversial organization, but I'm not necessarily sure that the rest of the world, when they hear about this organization, has any kind of a feeling or a sentiment about it, unless they're deeply involved in the Palestinian conflict. Can you tell us a few words about UNRWA and their intention? Of course, I've written extensively about UNRWA, but from your view, someone who's a watchdog organization head, what's the deal with UNRWA?
So UNRWA is the UN Relief and Works Agency, which is basically the UN agency for Palestinians. They run social services, clinics, and schools for Palestinians, also basically a welfare social service for Palestinians. And it is unique. For refugees around the world, tens of millions of refugees, we have the UN Refugee Agency, known as the UNHCR. That is the refugee agency for all refugees around the world. Their job is to resettle refugees. If you have refugees fleeing Syria or Sudan, what have you, UNHCR is trying to help them if they can't go home because there's war or persecution. You try to resettle them in other countries. And UNRWA is different. UNRWA is only for the Palestinians. It has 30,000 staff, which is way more staff than the refugee agency has for the whole world. And it does not try to resettle Palestinians. You know, Palestinian refugees from 1948 went to Lebanon, Jordan, nearby areas. You know, about 800,000 or more Jews fled Arab countries in that war and ensuing wars, and maybe 600,000 Palestinians, the numbers are disputed, went to neighboring countries. And rather than just be resettled and move on, it was over time, it became this thing where you don't resettle a Palestinian refugee. It's a sacred cause that they must go back to Israel and to basically undo Israel. The point of UNRWA really is that Palestinian refugees, and it's now not just those who fled, but their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, they're all called refugees. And basically the UNRWA narrative is that one day they're going to go back to where they were 80 years ago, basically to undo the 1948 creation of Israel. So if you ask me, October 7th, was I shocked and traumatized? Of course, but it is a direct consequence of the UNRWA message, which is your home is not in Gaza, even though it's called Palestine. No, your home is in Israel. So of course, you know, people brought up on that. It doesn't surprise me that they went to go invade and kill people who, in their view of things, have stolen their land. And that's what makes UNRWA pernicious. And I'll just quote the Swiss foreign minister, Ignazio Cassis, said 5 years ago in 2018, he said, UNRWA is part of the problem, not part of the solution. They're perpetuating the conflict. It's a perverse logic.
We have news coming out today. This is unprecedented.
It is, yeah.
This is wild. When you told me this news, as you saw, my mouth was on the floor because I couldn't believe it. I was just writing a script weeks ago about this issue, and I am shocked to see that from one day to the next, so many nations that have been supporting financially UNRWA have taken their money out. What is the significance of this?
Well, you know, I wrote a tweet yesterday where I wrote where this began, because we're still in the middle of it. I wrote upheaval. Upheaval. It is an upheaval of policy. The United States on Thursday told Israel Hayom, a leading daily in Israel, told them that UNRWA is a trusted partner, quote unquote, and will play a central role in post-war Gaza. So that's the U.S. position. It's very strongly supportive of UNRWA. That was Thursday. On Friday, the United States announced that they're suspending funds to UNRWA. So that, just to understand, that is a, you know, 180 degrees switch. The Canadian government, I'm Canadian, the Canadian government also incredibly supportive of UNRWA, our organization, UN Watch, has been documenting support for terrorism on social media by teachers who work for UNRWA. And we've been submitting it to the Canadian government, and they never even bothered to answer us. They may have done things behind closed doors, but nothing meaningful, and they didn't really seem that interested in dealing with it. They were also very pro-UNRWA. So for the Canadian government, which is part of a left-wing coalition in Canada, with a socialist party called the NDP, for that left-leaning government to freeze funds for UNRWA, Australia has a left-leaning government. They announced freezing funds for UNRWA. The Netherlands has frozen funds, just announced moments ago, they're frozen funds for UNRWA. Switzerland, that was the half, because they didn't say they suspended, but they said no more money for UNRWA until, no decision on funds for UNRWA until an investigation is completed, which basically means also effectively a suspension. Italy, Finland, Britain, I think those it's eight countries in total, have frozen funds for UNRWA. We've never had that ever before. A few years ago, because of corruption, there was a corruption scandal, a few countries suspended funding, but never eight countries. And so it's quite extraordinary. It's in response to the fact that UNRWA announced that about 12 of their employees were implicated in being involved in the October 7th massacre, rape, murder, mutilation by Hamas of Israeli civilians, approximately 1,200 people on October 7th. So UNRWA people were apparently involved. Apparently they participated. So I think that there's enormous pressure on Western countries. They're the ones who fund UNRWA. The leading funders are the US, Germany, Sweden, Canada, Australia, the Netherlands, and other Western European countries. The EU gives about $150 million a year. So I think they're under enormous pressure by this horrific news. And if you ask me, they probably are hoping that the story will go away and that there'll be some kind of investigation. UNRWA will announce we investigated and we took the necessary measures. Everything is fixed. In fact, some of the governments hinted that that's where they're going. Australia said, we're freezing funds, but we have full trust in how UNRWA is handling it. We're delighted, I'm paraphrasing, but we're delighted that they acted so swiftly. We have full confidence in them. So on the one hand, they froze funds, but on the other hand, it seems that they're saying they're keen and eager to restore the funds quickly. That's my read of it.
So if they're so keen to restore the funding, is this all is this theatrics?
Yes, I think it is performative. I think it's a way, for example, I'm about to testify in a hearing. There's a major hearing taking place on Tuesday, January 30th in Washington at the Congress. It's under the House Foreign Affairs Committee, a joint hearing of the Oversight and International Organization Subcommittees. And it's about UNRWA Exposed is the title. And we're going to be making the case against UNRWA, why UNRWA, as I said, is part of the problem, not part of the solution. Pressure was building. This Israeli evidence was submitted. One of the top State Department officials apparently flew to Israel, met with a general to review the evidence. So I think because of the pressure of the hearing and other things, I think the United States and other governments wanted to show that they take it seriously, but they still very much are invested in UNRWA. And it seems that they still very much are committed to UNRWA despite this announcement. That's my read of it.
The hearing that you are going to testify in was already scheduled before this announcement of withdrawing funds came out in the news. How were you invited? Why were you invited? Who created this hearing? And what is going to be the central theme of what you're going to share? And has this news shifted anything for you?
Well, I think the news, it doesn't shift anything for me. It actually only underscores our message, which has been the following. You know, for a decade, UN Watch has documented between 150 and 200 UNRWA teachers, school principals, and other staff who praise Hitler, who call for the murder of Jews, who celebrate Hamas attacks on a synagogue, and other despicable atrocities. This is routine and widespread throughout UNRWA. Their schools in Gaza, they teach Palestinians, next generation of so-called refugees, in Gaza, in the West Bank, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria. And until now, you know, we've called for measures to fire teachers of hate. And the response of UNRWA has generally been either to disparage us, to make ad hominem attacks against our organization, to try to make this story go away. If they couldn't make the story go away because of some pressure from America or another government, then they would suspend a handful for a few weeks and bring them back. They really didn't want to deal with the issue. And the reality is we're past that now, because after October 7th, we can't just sweep things under the rug. The reality is that UNRWA is perpetuating the conflict. As Dr. Anat Wilf, the world expert on UNRWA, said, this is not a bug that there are terrorists at UNRWA. It's a feature. It's not a bug, it's a feature. The whole point of UNRWA is to effectively say the war of 1948 is not over. You know, other conflicts had a war, there were refugees exchanged, and you make a settlement, you move on. The whole point of UNRWA is to say, we don't believe in a two-state solution, that the 1948 war that established Israel, after the five Arab countries declared war against Israel in violation of the UN decision, the partition plan, which recognized the Jewish state, the Arab states said, we'll never accept it and we're going to make war, which they did. And the point of UNRWA has become, it wasn't necessarily the initial motive, but the point of keeping UNRWA forever was to say the war of 1948 is not over. We do not accept a Jewish state. So it's time to end UNRWA. That's what I'm going to be saying at my testimony. It is time to recognize the truth that UNRWA is about keeping the war going, perpetuating the conflict. And it, in practical terms, we saw in Gaza, one of the Hamas spokesmen said it on TV. He said, they asked him, why aren't you helping your population? Why don't you build bomb shelters for them? You know, they build hundreds of miles of terror tunnels for their terrorists, but they don't care about their people. He said, no, our people are refugees. The UN takes care of the refugees. It's the UN's job. So in other words, think about what was happening. We thought Hamas needs to govern. You know, Israel pulled out, gave Gaza to the Palestinians. At the time, it was the PA. The PA was hit with a coup d'etat. Hamas attacked them and killed them and then took over Gaza. And people thought, well, Hamas has to govern. Guess what? And Hamas governing will moderate them because it's hard to govern and you have to give money for schools and hospitals. You have to take care of the people. Hamas said, no, we don't govern. UNRWA governs. So in any country where you have to divide up your money for guns or butter, do you give money for, you need money for schools, education, health, welfare, social services? Things take up a lot of money and some percentage goes for your military. For Hamas, 100% goes for their terrorism, 100%. UNRWA takes care of all the rest. So the effect of the American $330 million, Germany $200 million, Sweden millions of dollars, Ireland, which is doubling down on their support for UNRWA. Ireland is an anti-Semitic government, okay? And they are doubling down. That was their statement today, that they love UNRWA, after we know that UNRWA officials participated in a massacre. Ireland gave their support for UNRWA, which is really despicable. The idea that all the money that our taxes, if you're American, if you're in the European Union, if you're French, if you're in a Western country, Australia included, you are funding UNRWA, and that money helped Hamas because it meant that Hamas's money, because Hamas taxed people in Gaza, all of their money went directly to build terror tunnels, weapons, RPGs, grenades, machetes, everything they used to massacre, kill, rape, bomb, rockets. 100% of that money went for that. And UNRWA allowed them, by using our money, to pay for Palestinian, you know, welfare and health and education and all that. In the end, it turns out the Palestinians had money. It's just a question of priorities. And Hamas decided to build miles and miles of concrete terror tunnels with sophisticated ventilation and fuel. And they have the money. They're just spending it on terrorism. And by us funding UNRWA, we are enabling Hamas. It's got to end. It's got to end.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And of course, for bringing your years and years of work and dedication to this subject. I'm sure that it's all coming to a head right now and at Congress as well in a few days' time. And I also want to thank you for being for giving the Israel Daily News podcast the first interview on this matter.
My honor and pleasure.
Let us know what you thought about that interview. If you have responses, if you have thoughts, you can send us a direct message on Instagram at our israeldaily.news Instagram page, or you can always send me an email. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with monthly contributions by going over to anchor.fm/Israel Daily News. You can contribute whatever feels good for you. To make a one-time contribution instead of a monthly one, you can head over to GoFundMe. You can type in GoFundMe and Shanna Fold, and you can make a contribution for our special wartime coverage, which I take very seriously. And I also want to thank our latest contributor, Kathy Goodman, who sent us her encouragement to continue moving forward. Thank you for your listenership. If you have heard your name or you've donated, send me an email with your mailing address at shannafold@gmail.com. I'll respond with a handwritten note that I'm going to mail you to show my appreciation. You can also support us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. 2, you can share the show with a friend. And 3, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at israeldaily.news, as well as Shanna Fold. My name has 2 N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. You can also find us on Twitter at Israel Podcast. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, January 29th, 2024. Tel Aviv has a low of 12 degrees Celsius and a high of 16 degrees. That's 53 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 60 degrees for the high. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top 5 stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldaily.news. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'll send you off with a song called Hayati by Ariella Zeitlin, an impressive American-Israeli violinist. Enjoy her song and have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.